About a week ago, maybe a week and a half, somebody asked if I would do a lesson to remind us of how we ought to conduct ourselves as husband and wife. I want to tell you quite bluntly, it was not a man. I have never yet, in 40 years of preaching, had any man walk up to me and say, "I would like you to preach a lesson on husbands so I can learn what I need to do." But I've had countless number of women that have come and have asked, "Would you preach a lesson that I can learn how God expects me to conduct myself as a wife?" Now, I've had men ask me, "Would you preach a lesson and tell my wife how she's supposed to behave?" And I'm still, I told Sharon as I was thinking and putting this together, I still feel out of place when I'm asked to tell women how they ought to behave. And yet, when the Apostle Paul wrote unto Timothy and Titus, particularly in Titus, he told Titus that he was to teach the older women how they ought to be wives. So, it is not out of place to talk about it, but the authority comes not because I know what I'm talking about. It's because I know God knows what He's talking about. And as you begin dealing with how we are to live together as man and wife, one of the things that becomes very, very evident very quickly is that God gives us some very broad guidelines. And the specifics of how we're going to put that together and work that out in our lives, I've watched that is about as many different variations as we have couples in the church. And yet, the guidelines are rather specific on how we ought to live and how we ought to conduct ourselves. In Matthew 19, Jesus referred back to the book of Genesis. And He said, "Have you not read, He created them in the beginning. Created them male and female." And when you go back and read the book of Genesis, after He had created Adam, paraded all of the animals in front of Adam, and there was not found one among all of that would make a suitable mate for Adam. And so He took and He created from Adam's rib a mate that would complement and fulfill and be suitable for a relationship together for as long as they lived. Having made a suitable mate for him, He then said that the two are to become one. The joining together in this union, not of one person, but of one unit, one mindset, one union together against all of the rest of the world. And it is in fact God that joins together. But I found it rather interesting that when God did that, He said specifically unto the man, "For this cause shall a man leave his mother and father, and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." And I puzzled over that. The first puzzle was that Adam didn't have a mom and dad. But once you get past that, realizing that he's instructing for eternity and not just for Adam. I find it interesting that he didn't talk about the wife leaving the father and the mother and being joined. And I don't know whether you ever thought about that or not. But an interesting thing has happened as our world has expanded and we have been made aware of how marriage is in other parts of the world. And in many parts of the world, when a wife is given in marriage, she is then moved off into the mother-in-law's house and there becomes basically a slave to the mother-in-law. And what God did was, in patriarchal worlds, that is rather common, but it is not godly. And so what God did was He instructed the man to be a man, to be his own man. That a man would leave the structure of the mother and the father and now would become the husband with his wife. And the two of them, not the four of them, the two of them, not mom and dad and husband and wife, but the two of them are now joined together and they make a new unit. They make their own unit. They make their own family situation. And no longer to cleave unto mom and dad, but now it's a cleaving together of the husband and the wife, setting off on a journey together. I'd like you to turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. But I'm going to warn you, the rest of this lesson, I'm not going to talk about the wives. I plan on talking about that tonight. I really debated. So I'm going to give you a 5-minute timeout sermon and make it in 30 seconds. For all of you that don't come back tonight, you pose a real problem for the elders and for me as a preacher. Because many, many times the lessons are joined together and you're all getting just half of it. And today is going to be one of those. That we are going to talk about the full spectrum of husbands and wives, but I'm not going to keep you here until 2 o'clock. So we'll come back and do the other half. So I would encourage and invite you to come back. But in 1 Peter chapter 3, he talks about what the wife ought to do. And then in verse 7, he says, "Husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Our marriages intersect our spiritual condition. And how we conduct ourselves in the privacy of our homes, where nobody else is watching, dictates our hearts before God. And when we do not conduct ourselves correctly towards each other, it will affect our prayers. It will affect our children, our grandchildren. It will affect our neighbors. It will affect the congregation that we are with. It has an effect. And what God expected of the husbands is that He expected that they would then live together. And when He says that, I like the way that Peter wrote that. What happens is we are a unit that are heirs together of the grace of God. If I were a young lady and I was looking for a husband, I would look for a husband that was interested more in serving God than in being married. And I don't know how you find that. I don't know where you're going to find that. What I understand from this standpoint, now being an old man and having been married since the time of Noah, I begin realizing how we conduct ourselves is really, really, really important to our spiritual condition. That I've watched as couples have struggled in their relationship one with another, and what I've watched is they struggle with church. They struggle with the Lord. They struggle with their very spiritual being, because when your life is in turmoil, it's hard to be spiritual. When you're spending energy fighting one another, you have very little time to pray. Very little time to walk with God in earnestness and submission and humility and zeal for God and righteousness. And so what Peter talks about here is, husbands, when you view this relationship, you need to view this as we are heirs together. And again, that takes it away from a top and a bottom, a master and a slave, an owner and an object. That what we are is two of God's people that have joined together to make this journey. And if I was going to pick, I would pick somebody that would help me be a Christian. Out of all of the people and all of the criterion, I will confess I'd pick somebody that was cute that would help me to be a Christian. I understand that. But at the same time, if they're not going to help you be a Christian, you're probably better off not getting married. And if you are a Christian, that this then becomes a priority in your life. And part of that priority is you must understand we are married to each other, but God joined us together and it's for His glory and His honor. And when we don't live as we ought to live, we dishonor our head, we dishonor Christ, and we bring a dishonor to the very concept of God and righteousness. And so we are heirs together in this. And what that means is, one of the books that I read in college talked about relationships and how relationships oftentimes fluctuate. And most of the time, they just flip-flop. One of them is acting as the parent and the other acts as the child. And then something else will happen and the wife will be the parent and scold the little boy for being bad. And then it'll turn right around and she will dent the car and he will be the father that lectures her about how she... And the point that I'm getting at is that is absolutely not biblical. That we are not parent and child either way, but we are husband and wife. We are a mate, one for the other. And when you find yourself acting as the parent, your relationship is in trouble. When you begin thinking that you have to teach your husband, or the husband thinks, I have to teach the wife on how she ought to behave, and how she ought to think, and how she ought to do this, and how she ought to do that, the marriage is in trouble. I was sitting in a Bible class when I first was converted, and a friend of mine was teaching, and he said, "How old should our children be when they get married?" And people began throwing out numbers. And he let that happen for a while, and then he smiled and he said, "You're all wrong. Our children ought never get married. When they become adults, they can get married. But as long as they are children, they have no business getting married. And if you got married, you married an adult, one adult to another adult. And now we are in this as a unit, and it is not parent and child. It is husband and wife." And that changes how we think about things. And when you find yourself migrating over to this parent relationship, I want you to just think about this. There's something radically wrong here in your relationship with your wife or your husband. What he also said was, the father ought to leave, the husband ought to leave, and ought to cleave unto his wife. This is a mindset that we have drastically changed today. I mentioned last week that there was a movement made suggesting that maybe we ought to have 2-year marriages. And at the end of 2 years, you can renegotiate. And the problem comes, if you only enter into it for 2 years, you won't enter into it the same way that you enter into it when you do it for life. It's the same way when a young couple decides to test marriage by simply living together for a while, to see if we're really compatible to be married. And I'm going to tell you, the problem with that is neither one of them act married. They reserve themselves. There's part of themselves that they hold back. And when a couple gets married, there is no holding back. The way God expects us to get married is completely. No longer self, but you've given yourself to the other person. And I'm going to tell you what, that's a scary proposition. You think you know who they are, but you don't. And us that have been married for any number of years, we take a look at young people as they're getting married, and sometimes I find myself just shaking my head, thinking, they don't have a clue what they're doing. And sometimes I think, maybe that's the way it has to be. Because maybe if they knew what some of the problems they're going to have to face, they may not do it. Well, we've done it. And now that we're married, God says, here's what you're going to do. And so the leaving and the cleaving unto one another, and the husband has to make up his mind, this is my mate. It's always an interesting thing to me. How many men, when they're on business trips or they're traveling or they're out having lunch with people, and they see a very attractive lady, the very first thing they do is they check out her left hand to see if she's got a ring. Why? You look at your own left hand. That's your ring. That's your commitment. That was your say-so. That here's what I am doing. I am going to marry this woman and I am going to withhold myself from everybody else and I will give myself to her and to her only for as long as I shall live. That's what normally gets said in a marriage, and it ought to be. And so what we've done is we've entered into this relationship and now it is me, and the thing that I have to hold on to is my affections. I cannot give them to anybody else. My desires. I cannot give those to anybody else. This has to be absolutely, unreservedly given to one and only one. We are to live with our wives according to knowledge. And you know, all kinds of smart aleck jokes come up at this point in time. How in the world can a man know? And you know, that is a problem for most men. Now, women do all kinds of strange things. They will buy books about marriage and read them. They will buy books about what makes men tick, and they will read it. They will get together with their friends, and they will talk about, what do you do when your husband is like this? They'll even call up a preacher and say, would you preach a lesson on how I ought to do this? And men just don't do that, but I'm going to tell you, we need to. Because women are different. And one of the things that you learn very quickly is women are different from each other. I went to a marriage seminar one time and they gave an illustration that I've loved and used. This I didn't think of, but they said, it's kind of like a tree. And so you go plant a tree in the backyard, and that tree has needs. It may be a tree that needs 5 gallons of water a week. And so you buy the tree and you plant the tree, and then you turn around and you say, now, I'm a 1 gallon a week man. And you may think you need 5 gallons, but I'm going to give one, because that's me. And you're going to learn to live with it. And you're going to learn to be, and what you end up with is a dead tree. So if you want to know, how do I live with this woman, the first thing you do, ask. And I'm going to tell you what, don't ask me. Ask your wife. Sit down and talk to your wife. Sit down and periodically listen to what she is saying. And when she is talking about various concepts and things that she needs in her life, when you signed on for the marriage, men, you signed on to be the head of the house, to provide that which is needed. And so it's not up to you to decide how much you're going to give. It's up to you to give what is needed in that relationship. Living with her according to knowledge is to acknowledge the fact that at least in a physical realm, using a very big paintbrush now, because I recognize I've met a couple women that were stronger than their husbands. I've met some puny little Don Knotts type characters that married some big brawny women, and they ended up getting beat up every week. But that is an absolute exception to the rule, and what happens is we acknowledge this. I don't know why our government keeps thinking we can just deny it and make it so, and so we can just put a woman into any position and she will. And the answer is, no, there's limitations here. And they're physical limitations. And as we begin talking about that, one way of looking at this that changes the whole attitude is if you had, for example, a very expensive glass. Now, many of you women have those. And what you do, you don't put those up in the normal cupboard. And you don't hand them to your 4-year-old when he wants a drink of milk. What you do is you take that, and it is fragile. And because it is fragile, you protect it. And you use it for special occasions with special people. And you begin handling it different. You don't put it in the dishwasher. You don't throw it in with the rest of the dishes in the sink. And when we begin thinking of our lives not just as a weaker vessel, but as one that is fragile in the sense of special. When you begin thinking of your wife as the pearl of great price, the one and only that you can get, and therefore rather than abusing it because I'm married, you begin handling it with kid gloves, with care, with concern. Living with your wife according to knowledge as a special person. When you live with your wife, he says, we are to give unto our wives honor. I get so angry at times. People will knock on my door and say, we're having problems. Can we get together and talk? And you walk into this and you sit down and you can just feel the anger and the tension. And when the husband begins talking about his wife, it's hard to use the language. She's so dumb. She's so stupid. She's so uncaring. And these words just come out of his mouth and you can literally watch as they go straight into her heart. And she wilts. And her character dies. I did this one time. It's not a good counseling technique, so I won't do it again. But after the man went on doing that for a while, I looked at him and I said, you undoubtedly are the stupidest man in the world. Why would anybody marry somebody that inept and dumb and unable to function? And then he threatened to beat me up because I just insulted his wife by using the language he used to talk about her. And you know what? He sinned. He did not honor his wife. When you talk about your wife, whether she's there or not, you talk about her in words of honor. You talk about her in words that show you respect her. That you hold her up as a person. And she has a special place in your heart, in your affections, in your life. The old story in the society that you had to pay a dowry for your wife. And this one man fell in love with one of the older, 23, one of the older unmarried women. And nobody else in the community wanted her. And so she was worth one cow in their bargaining line. And this man went to her father and he said, I want to marry your daughter and I will give you 10 cows if you will let me marry your daughter. And nobody in that community had ever given 10 cows for a wife. And when that got rumored among the people, everybody that saw her in a different light. They didn't know why she was worth 10 cows, but that's what she was worth. And their view of her was no longer as the rejected woman of the tribe. But she became the most special of all of the women. And it had nothing to do with what she was worth, good or bad. It had everything to do with how the husband viewed his wife. I would challenge most of us as husbands. We don't do that. We don't honor our wife. We allow ourselves in conversations to talk about our wives in demeaning ways, to bring up the things that are problems for her or weaknesses for her. And brethren, I'm going to tell you, knock it off. Peter said, treat your wife with honor, with respect. Don't talk to her like a 3-year-old. Don't talk about her as someone that is incompetent and lazy. You need to give honor unto your wife. And when you do, you need to remember, we're in this together. She is as much a reflection of me. And if I don't honor her, brethren, that really does reflect upon the husband. But God said so. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul said very simply, husbands, love your wives. But then he said, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave Himself for it. When I got married, preacher friend of mine that did the wedding is probably the most unromantic clod I've ever had the privilege of knowing. He actually, in the middle of the ceremony, 3 times looked at me and said, if you're going to leave, now's the time to do it. To this day, I've often wondered what would have happened if I would have just taken 2 steps back. But I didn't have the nerve to do that. But then he looked, and in the middle of the sermon, he told me something that was absolutely true, but he used probably some of the worst phrasing that you could do. He says, you think you love her, but you don't. And I thought, sure I do. I'm going to tell you what I've learned in 45 years. I loved her to the best of my ability then. I just didn't have much ability. I didn't have much knowledge. I didn't know what love really was all about, because until you are open, living together, married, and completely vulnerable to each other, you don't have a clue what this is all about. But once you do, now you begin seeing that love involves not just the physical joining together, but the honor, the respect. And when you have times of disagreements, can you have a disagreement respectfully? Can you be angry at your mate and at the same time not speak evil of them? Can you be angry with your wife and not become derogatory and demeaning in your relationship? When we talk about love, what we mean is that I'm going to love my wife as Christ loved the church, which first of all means completely. Completely to the point that He died sacrificially for the church. So completely that He was willing to protect and provide for the church, even if it killed Him, and it did. And so He didn't tell me to love my wife. He said, I want you to love your wife as I've loved you. I want you to love your wife as I love the church. And so when we begin doing that, one of my favorite passages is 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love is patient and love is kind, and it goes on. But I'm going to tell you, you need to take your Bible and a piece of paper and you need to rewrite that. Because if I can honestly say I love my wife, then I can honestly say I am patient. Because love is patient. Am I patient? If you don't know, I'll tell you who does. Just ask her. Love is kind. And if I love my wife, that means I'm kind. Are you harsh? Sometimes I watch husbands and wives and their relationship, and I'm going to tell you, the word kindness doesn't come to mind. As they talk to one another, and as they talk about one another, and as they treat one another, and as they interact with one another, it's harsh. It's hard. That's not love. If I love my wife, I do not envy. I've watched sometimes a married couple and somebody begins talking about the wife because she has a particular ability. And they begin extolling and honoring the wife. And sometimes the husbands can't take it. Yeah, but you ought to see how she does this. Yeah, but you ought to. And what they do is they're envious of the fact that the wife is getting any accolade. Watch as husbands and wives try to tell stories together. You get a lot of insight into their relationship. And when he begins telling the stories about her, the words that he used, he's envious. Love doesn't envy. Love does not boast. I've had several men look me in the eye and say, she's so lucky. That's boastful. To think of ourselves as being such a great catch that she is lucky that I would stoop low enough to marry her kind of woman. Does that sound bad? It ought to. But I've seen husbands do that. That absolutely is not love. I'm not arrogant. Well, that last illustration was. And if we cannot talk about our wives and to our wives in a way that is loving and kind and building up, and we become arrogant. Love is not rude. I was walking down a grocery store aisle one time, an old couple. And we happened to be going through the cereal aisle. And he saw a box of cereal, Cocoa Puffs or whatever it was. And it caught his eye. That sounded good. I think she'd kept him out of the cereal aisle because she knew this was going to happen. But that day he grabbed the box and he put it in the box in the car, and she grabbed the box out of the car and she jammed it back up on the shelf, and she turned to him, "We don't eat that, you old fool." That's rude. That's rude if she said it to me and I'm not married to her. Let alone to say it to your husband. Or the husband saying it about the wife. It's rude. And if you love your wife, you're not rude to her. you will be kind. Does not insist on its own way. Man, do many husbands fail at that point. And they fail quoting Scripture as they say, I'm the head of the house and here's what you're going to do. And that's not love. That's not the relationship that God gave to us. Love does not insist on its own. God, love is not irritable. Love is not resentful. I don't rejoice when she has problems. That's what it means. Husbands, love your wives. I'm going to challenge you. Here's where the problem comes. I was asked to talk about wives, and in my experience, husbands don't create an atmosphere where wives can be what God expects them to be easily. Yes, wives can still be what God expects, but husbands oftentimes make it nearly impossible for them. And so, if we are godly people as husbands, one of the things that God wants me to do is to make that relationship in such a way that I promote godliness in my wife. That I make it easy for my wife to be godly. I make it easy for my wife to be submissive. How in the world do you make it easy for your wife to be submissive? And the answer is, you think about her first and foremost and always. If every decision you make, the first thing you ask is, how is this going to affect her? How is this going to benefit her? How is this decision going to be the best that she can be stronger as a Christian? If every time you have a decision to make, you make it from that basis, you make it easy. In fact, I've said before, a woman would have to be nuts not to want to submit if the person she's submitting to is forever making every decision for her best interest, no matter what it costs him. That's what Jesus said. Love your wives as I've loved the church. Jesus made the decisions based upon our needs and what was best for us, and not what it was going to cost him. Husbands, we control how easy or difficult it is for our wives to go to heaven. We are heirs together of the grace of God. So, you can do this. And if you want to know how to do it better, on the way home, turn to your wife and say, how am I doing? And then tighten your seatbelt down. Because she knows. And if you have treated her in such a way that she's afraid to tell you the truth, you're not a good husband. If you've treated her in such a way that you can't have that conversation, you're not a godly husband. What we need is godly husbands. And that will promote godly wives. Page 2 tonight. And we'll talk about putting this into practice from the woman's standpoint. Now, if you're with us and you're not a Christian, I'm going to tell you what. It's not easy to be what God expects us to be. There are many aspects of our relationship, and the first thing that God expects us to do is to die to self. And that involves our marriage, that involves our jobs, that involves our relationship to a church. And in dying to self, I then need to be buried and to be raised in newness of life and to walk with God, Jesus as my Lord. Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved." If you can't submit unto the Lord, then we can't submit unto each other. And we need to submit. If you're willing and able to do that, we invite you to become a Christian and then live as a godly person. As together we stand and as we sing.